The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now.
Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am, of course, the libertarian Tupac, the most consistent motherfucker you know, and he is the king of the cocks, Robbie the Fire Bernstein. What's up, my brother? How you feeling this morning?
Doing pretty good. How about you, Davey Smith?
I'm doing all right. I am a little bummed, and something I wanted to mention at the start of the show. I really am very saddened to hear that the creek in the cave is closed. For people who don't know, the creek in the cave is a comedy club in New York City that really meant a lot to me. And Rebecca Trent, who is the owner of it, just announced yesterday that they're not going to reopen. You know, they've been shut down this whole time, and she just couldn't make it work. I think that they had pretty thin profit margins as it was, and this lockdown has just destroyed them. So it's just, you know, it's one example of what's probably happening to millions of businesses around the country. But they're not going to open their doors again. And it really bummed me out. The creek in the cave meant a lot to me. And it was really my home for years. The creek in the cave is literally, it's where I met my wife. Me and Lauren met for the first time at the creek in the cave. I also met Brian, our producer at the creek in the cave. He used to work there back in the day. So the two loves of my life, Lauren and Brian, I met them both at the creek in the cave. Legion of Skanks found our voice at the creek in the cave. Rebecca gave us a home there. We did the roast of Big J. We did the first Skank Fest ever at the creek in the cave. And that's just, you know, a few examples. There are a ton of shows, like way too many to remember all of. It was such a cool thing that they had going there for a while. All different types of comedy, like everything under the sun. You know, it was like everything from like really wild alt comedy sketch shit that they had going on there. Colin Quinn worked out his fucking one man show, or one of them. I can't remember which one. Ted Alexandro did an hour there. Seinfeld performed there. And then it was also just like all the open mics you could handle would be going on at the creek. I know you've performed there a bunch of times, Rob. It's just really sad. It was a cool space for people to like work out their comedy. And Rebecca Trent was really, really like, she was different than any other club owner. She was just more involved and cared more. And there are comedians literally who were like homeless, you know, she'd like give a bed to sleep at night. No exaggeration, like literally she'd do that. Rebecca, I remember when I got in 2013, when I got Just for Laughs, which was like a really big deal to me at the time. Nothing came of it, but at the time it felt like a really big deal. And I remember getting up there and being like a little intimidated. You're at this huge comedy festival. And literally Rebecca was the one who introduced me to everyone. I remember my first show up there as nervous as like my first big show. And the first joke I told, I hear Rebecca's dumb cackling laugh coming from the back of the theater. I was just like, cool. Like she was just one of those people who really had comedians' backs. And anyway, I'm bummed out to hear that they close. It sucks. They had an incredible run. And like I said, I met a lot of really great people there. It was like life changing. And I was really happy to be a part of that, that family. And yeah, you know, some woke shit ended up coming in the last couple of years, but that's true of everywhere in America. It was rest in peace to the Creek and Cave. And, you know, and it just goes to kind of show in the broader theme, you know, of stuff we talk about in the show, but it's one more fucking business just killed by these lockdowns. And, you know, it's like, you can talk about it in the abstract all you want, but it feels different when it kind of hits close to home. And it's like, you know, people who relied on this business and who benefited from it, people who worked there and all that. And, yeah, God damn it. These lockdowns are just so fucking awful. It's anyway, sad to see that. And look, Rob, it looks like they might be pushing for more lockdowns. I was really thinking there was probably a good chance we wouldn't go in this direction because they would just see, you know, especially after the election, just the unmitigated damage that it's caused, like in every level, not just the businesses that have been destroyed, but the actual lives that it's cost. I don't know if you've seen any of these numbers, Rob, but like, there's a really creepy thing that cancer screenings have plummeted over the last year. Now, I don't know exactly how they're going to measure the amount of deaths that come as a result of that, but you just look at the numbers and it's like cancer screenings have plummeted. Like, okay, how many preventable cancers are we not catching now that we would have caught if these screenings hadn't, you know, gone down so drastically? So many things like this, so many people's lives fucked up by these lockdowns, and it's not even clear that they help with the virus at all. It seems like they don't really mitigate the virus that well. And even if they mitigate it a tiny bit, as soon as you open back up, the thing spreads again anyway. There's so many examples now. You just, you know, it's like, you look at Spain and you look at Sweden. Who would you rather be? It's so obvious. So I didn't think they would, you know, dare go for another round of them, but now you've seen Cuomo and these guys that Cuomo just instituted curfews, in New York City. And, for like bars and restaurants have to close by like 10 PM and they're really,
curfew makes another round. No, firstly, it's the gayest way of dealing with something. Like, mm-hmm. I'd rather just be told I can't go out. Curfew sucks. I don't want to be told I have curfew from anybody ever. And also, it doesn't make sense because if you want to space out the amount of time that people can go to a place, why would you restrict the amount of hours that they could be there?
Yeah. Well, I guess in the same way that COVID attacks Trump rallies, but not Black Lives Matter protests, COVID maybe called Cuomo, told him, look, I'm really planning on coming out at night. So if you can just keep people before 10 p.m., I won't mess with them.
I guess maybe the argument is people get more hammered as the night goes on, and so they're less care. But it's like, compared to protests or any other bullshit, it's just dumb. Yeah. Yeah, I remember I went to one. I just thought this was so funny. I went to like one bar in Connecticut. I left my house once. It was a really great day, Dave. And when I went, I walked into the, like, they yelled at me to like put the mask on so that you could go to your table and take it off. It made no sense, but you're not allowed in without the mask on.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was in Austin, I had dinner with Scott Horton, and it's like the same thing. Like, you have to have a mask as you walk to your table. And then like and Scott left his in his car. And so he's just kind of like pulls his shirt over his face and they're like, yeah, that's okay. And then we sit down and take it off. And it's just, this whole thing is just, it's so retarded. I had at my, at the hotel I was staying at in Austin. So like there's these fucking rules that are so I ordered room service one night when I was there, and they're like, oh, we can't bring it up to your room. You have to come down and get it. So I still have to come down and interact with the guy.
At that point, didn't just order seamless? Why? Like the whole point is to bring it to the room.
This is literally, yes, it's the whole thing is that I'm too lazy to do anything else. So I'm like, all right, whatever. So, but I walk down and it's like, I still have to go grab it from the guy. Like I'm just as close to the guy. You're like, this is just you saving a trip up to my room. Like this is all bullshit. Now, of course, when you're in the hotel lobby,
did he get to push your own cart though? Did he get like the whole cart set up with the curtain?
No, that would have been at least kind of cool.
I hate this guy.
Yeah, it was brutal. So then in the lobby of the hotel, of course, you have to wear a mask, right? And look, to be fair, it's like a city ordinance or whatever. It's not like they're making, but you have to wear a mask. So everybody's masked in the lobby. Unless, of course, you sit down at the hotel bar, which is open. And then you could just take the mask off and just sit there. So you're sitting there wearing a mask, looking over at the hotel bar, seeing people sitting there without a mask on. It's just like all of this stuff is so fucking stupid. But it's also, it's more than the stupidity of it. It's like, you know, it's like ruining people's lives. And it's just unbelievable. It's hard to imagine that people, and really sad and creepy, that so many people accept this. And that even at this point, they're not just like, no, listen, we are fucking going back to life. It's like, okay, is life a little bit more dangerous than it used to be? Yes. All right, fine. But that's not enough of a reason to give up on everything. It's just sickening.
I wonder to what extent it's getting, I mean, this is the one thing I guess that's changed over the last month is I've noticed that there's some open mics in Connecticut. So I started going to open mic, which to me is a lifesaver because I can actually work on jokes. It makes a big difference for me. But God bless anyone and whatever else you're doing with your life. I can just tell you that one makes a big difference. And if that goes away, that's going to be really annoying. But I really don't, I can't imagine people are willing to go through another round of this as it didn't work. Like, you know, when you kind of preached, hey, it's going to be 2 weeks, everyone kind of could wrap their head around, all right, a 2 week contribution, fine. We're done. We did it. You didn't have a plan. You don't have a plan now. So what are we supposed to do? Just sit in our houses and wait for you to send us checks with the currency you're inflating? Fuck that.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys, let's take a quick second. I want to thank our awesome sponsor for today's show, which is Sheath Underwear. Sheath makes the most comfortable boxer briefs I've ever worn. They're the only underwear I wear at this point. I'm wearing a pair right now. If you're sick of boxers that are too loose or briefs that are too tight, Sheath is for you. Here's what makes Sheath unique. The stretchy fabric is made out of a moisture wicking technology. They feel super soft, keep everything cool, comfortable, right in place. It's the perfect underwear for working out. Plus, the most unique thing about Sheath underwear is they have these dual pouches that keep your man parts separated. They keep everything where it's supposed to be. With the holidays coming up, Sheath underwear is the perfect gift for you or the man in your life who's tired of being sweaty and chafing and all that stuff. They just want comfort and support. Go to sheathunderwear.com. Now, if you're not interested in the pouch, by the way, you can just wear them like regular underwear. I was a little skeptical of the pouch, but I love it. It's incredible. Either way, it's going to be the most crazy comfortable pair of boxer briefs you've ever worn in your life. Plus, the founder of Sheath Underwear is a big fan of the show and a libertarian, so definitely check them out, support them. It's a great product, a great company. Go to sheathunderwear.com, get the most comfortable pair of underwear you'll ever own. And if you use the promo code PROBLEM20, you'll also get 20% off your order. One more time, sheathunderwear.com, promo code PROBLEM20 for 20% off. All right, let's get back into the show. You know, I was on a Kennedy show last night on with the great Kennedalia. And there was this guy, Michael, I think his name was. He's like a Democrat, some Democrat on the panel. I've never met him before, but he said at one point, he triggered me. He triggered me bad when, at one point he said something. We like argued a little bit.
You're saying he annoyed you. You're not saying like he said the words, he triggered me because he's such a leftist.
I'm saying he triggered me, because he said at one point when, you know, I was arguing, you know, about Trump not accepting the election results. And he was like, well, the problem is that this leads to anti-government terrorism, just like it. And he started naming examples. And he goes, just like at just like Timothy McVeigh or the people at Waco. And I interrupted him and I said, the only terrorists at Waco were the ATF. So anyway, so that's you. He I don't know, unknowingly, but he pushed my fucking buttons. But he said at one point, we were talking about the idea of more lockdowns, and he said something like, he goes, well, look, if all the scientists agree that this is what we need to do, then we have to do it. And I said, you know, this is the idea that all the scientists agree is just something that politicians say. That is never the case. All scientists don't agree on anything. Okay. And the idea that all the scientists agree that we need another lockdown is so patently, like, it's such bullshit. It's like, no, they don't. And everybody with an internet connection knows this. There are thousands and thousands of scientists who agree with what we're saying. Now, they might get their videos removed from YouTube or whatever, but it's so infuriating when this follow the science crowd just sits there and goes, well, all the scientists say, like, no, they fucking don't. Okay. All of the scientists don't say this. And this is like what's so aggravating about the follow the science crowd is that you just want to follow the science you want to follow. I saw Chris Hayes. It's just goddamn awful. Chris Hayes, who's a host of a show at MSNBC and is the poster boy for soy. Joe Borelli, he tweeted, which I got to say, I kind of love this. And again, like, you know, I think Joe Borelli, if I'm not wrong, what is he? He's a contributor at The Hill. And, you know, appears on Fox News and stuff like that. So I'm assuming he's like a conservative guy. Now, libertarians like us, we have had many disagreements with conservatives over the year. I think conservatism in America has been a failure, you know, and they have no claim to existence, basically. They don't conserve anything. They don't actually stand for anything. They certainly don't conserve, you know, they don't have any claim to the Constitution or limited government. They don't have any claim to traditional American life. They always just cede ground to the left. And obviously we have a lot of, you know, criticisms of the left and Democrats and liberals and all of this stuff. But you really do have to acknowledge that when it comes to this last year, this year of 2020, it's like, well, the left half of America is happy to accept the government gaining totalitarian control, not like the way libertarians used to say, like, the government kind of acts in this paternal or maternal, you know, role. I mean, like, straight up, the government's giving you a curfew. The government's telling you how many people you can have in your room. The government's telling you when you can go out, if you can go to church, all of this shit. And the left half of America is not only cheering it on, not only accepting, or shit, not only accepting it, but cheering it on, not only cheering it on, but happy to rat out anybody else who doesn't accept it. And so there is a major difference here, and it's pretty important. I got to say, I loved what this guy Joe Borelli tweeted. So he said, I'll be having more than 10 people at my house on Thanksgiving. My address is public record. Some of my family will come, gasp, from New Jersey. Kids will see their grandparents. Cousins will play in the yard. Sis-in-law will bring strawberry rhubarb pie, and a turkey will be overcooked. Like, I just thought that was awesome. Like, he's just like, look, here's where I live. I'm having more than 10 people over. I'm living my life. I have a family and we're having Thanksgiving together. Fuck you. My words, not his, but it was the spirit of his words. And I don't know, for anybody who is loosely into the whole freedom idea. Yeah. Here's a guy saying, I don't care what the government tells me. I'm going to have my family over for Thanksgiving. If you can't even, like, appreciate the freedom to do that, then get out of the business of calling yourself a libertarian. Okay. So Chris Hayes, soy boy and MSNBC resident, he tweeted, increasingly, he retweeted that tweet and said, increasingly, the entire Republican Party has basically taken the side of the virus and are actively trying to spread it. This is like what we're dealing with. This is the level of like argument, if you can call it that, that we're dealing with. This guy says, his tweet was, kids will be playing with each other. They're going to see their cousins. I'm going to hang out with my grandma. My sister's going to come over with a pie that she made. And he goes, you're on the team of the virus. You're just actively trying to spread the virus. actively trying to spread the virus. Or another way to look at it would be actively trying to live a human life, like have some degree of humanity, which like, I don't, you know, it's like if you were thrown into like a pit with a cage, you know, like something out of Silence of the Lambs, like you're just being kept at the bottom and someone's dropping you food. Yeah.
Okay, I can get by for a little while.
All the lotion. You're not going to be ashy down there. Don't worry. But someone was just like lowering you food, you know, down there. And there's oxygen. And that's like your life for now on. Would you go like, all right, I'm alive. That's really what's important. My heart is still beating and I'm still a biological entity. Or would you be like, yeah, no, that's that. There's more to life than just that. So like what we're talking about here is like living. Having a human existence, a life, and the way, not some rando on the internet, but the way of I guess in some circles, respected liberal, you know, TV host says, this is you actively trying to spread the virus. You're on team virus. How about I'm on fucking team humanity, team life. And I don't want to see more of these awful stories of people's lives just being ruined. And I'll tell you, and it's something I know I've mentioned this before, but it really is something that becomes more apparent when you have a kid, that you just realize like these moments, this isn't nothing. The time is precious, and the you know, missing like one Thanksgiving with your family, that's a Thanksgiving you'll never get back. Like you realize that when you have a kid. Like my daughter's going to be two in a few weeks, and that's it. This is her at two. Like, I'll never have this time back. I'll never have my daughter at one back. That's gone. That's out in, you know what I mean? Like, in the land of memories in the past. That'll never be back. I'll never have my daughter at 1 year old again. It's very depressing, by the way. Even though two is really awesome. But it's like, you realize, like, those moments, those memories that I had with her, with my family when she was one, that was precious. And fuck you and fuck anybody who thinks they can take that away from me. You're not going to. And for someone to tell you you're on the team of the virus, Guy Benson, who I like very much, he's a journalist over at Fox News. He was on with me last night on Kennedy. And he said at one point where he was like making an argument against, the lockdowns. And, he said he made like a few really solid points about it. And then he said at one point, I forget exactly how he put it, but he said, you know, this might be a somewhat superficial point, but like, after the year that Americans have had to take their holiday season away from them this year, it's just a really awful thing to do to people. And I actually interrupted him to be like, that's not a superficial point. It's like a really important point. And it's not, that's not nothing. You know, like even, you know, when you like, you know, like in historical periods where human beings were like starving, they'd still have like feasts and celebrations and holidays and parties, even when like that people were at such a subsistence level of living that like starvation was a really, you know, like a real threat. Making it through the winter was a real threat. And you'd still see things about a feast, a celebration, a party, because human beings need that. We're more than just, we're made for more than just trying to live through another day. We need these moments. You need to be around people, around family, all this shit. So anyway, fuck the lockdowns. That's the theme of the open of the show. Fuck the lockdowns. Fuck all these people. Fuck Chris Hayes. There you go. All right.
And if you're going to take issue with that guy said about getting together in the backyard with his family, he should be eating pecan pie. This is Thanksgiving. Fuck that strawberry shit. That's like a summer thing.
Rhubarb? What did he say?
I don't even know what a rhubarb pie is, and I know my pies.
Yeah.
Fucking up.
No, there's completely legitimate ground to criticize this guy, but just not on the hanging out with his family, but on all this other shit. All right, guys, let's take a quick second. I want to thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Amigo. They're a modern bidet brand changing your bathroom experience. Honestly, bidets are game changers. You'll never go back to just toilet paper. Washing is so much better than wiping. You want to get truly clean. You want to actually feel fresh. This is what you need to do. And these aren't old school bidets. They attach right to your toilet. They're super easy. No need to call a plumber. You can easily do it yourself. It takes about 15 minutes. It's time to ditch the toilet paper for good. It's not doing you any favors. Fresh water cleans better. You need to check out Amigo. It's a total game changer. They have a bidet for every toilet, every butt, every budget. Go to myamigo.com/POTP and you'll get 15% off today. That's myomigo.com/POTP for 15% off. Get a bidet today. All right, let's get back into the show. So by the way, it's just as I put it there, I get a news update on my phone. So
pies when you get a news update,
no more pies. This is in 2020 when you get a news update, you almost just like brace yourself for a second. You're like, what the fuck's going on here? Yeah, it was ESPN. I guess the Marlins traded someone. Anyway, so the other like kind of overarching theme that I wanted to talk about on today's show was the idea of conspiracy theories and how prevalent they are right now in our society. And on so many, in so many different ways, that's really coming to light and has been, I guess, for quite a while when you think about it. But it's one of the major issues that the establishment is kind of putting out there right now, that the real problem, you know, with Donald Trump not accepting the results of this election are that basically half the country is going to look at Joe Biden as illegitimate, that he wasn't the legitimate duly elected president of the United States. And this is a big problem. Now, forget that this is the party of Hillary Clinton and Stacey Abrams and all of that. Like, but all of a sudden, this is a real problem. Now, from our perspective, you know, we kind of think no president is legitimate and that governments in general aren't legitimate. So it's hard to really be like concerned that, oh, a bunch of people might see it this way. But it's nonetheless, it's kind of interesting that it will be so easy for people to believe that. Like, that will not be hard at all to convince people that this whole thing is a conspiracy. You know, it's like that's Americans right now in 2020 are right there. And you could see why that might be the case. And you know, truthfully speaking, this has been building for years. And of course, many of the Democrats never saw Trump as the legitimate president. You know, it was Russia who put him in there, whatever. This stuff's been going on for a while and it's been building. You know, the like Bush did 9/11 shit was a lot more popular than you would think during the Bush administration. The Obama is a Muslim or isn't, you know, really American, therefore illegitimate. That was more popular, more widely believed than you might think. During the Obama years. And now it's really built bigger and bigger. And my basic theory on all of this, and I talked about this a bit when I was on Rogan's podcast, is that corruption breeds conspiracy theories. When you have a very corrupt system and people can tell that it's very corrupt, they're much more likely to believe wild conspiracies about that corrupt system, because they're kind of like, well, it is fucking, the whole thing is bullshit, so maybe that's the case. You know, we talked briefly when I was on Rogan about QAnon conspiracy theories, and I said, you know, which I've probably said on this show before too, but I go, it's really impossible to just dismiss the QAnon stuff after the Jeffrey Epstein stuff all came out, and you see what that is. It's like, so who are these people to like, they've lost all the ground to argue with conspiracy theorists, because there are these real life conspiracies that are, you know, pretty horrific that have been confirmed that are real. So who are they? Like what the strongest argument that you could have against like a QAnon conspiracy theorist, right? In theory, would be to be like, oh, come on, you know that you may have a problem with politicians, but you know they would never be a part of something this evil. But you've seeded that argument because they were a part of something this evil. And, you know, you're just taking it one step further. I think this is more widespread than that. I think it's not just this one pedo ring. I think there's many pedo rings. Like, okay, how do you really have a solid argument against that? Or how do you really like destroy the case when there's all this other shit? So
check Nancy Pelosi's second freezer. That's what I've been saying. She's got one full of ice cream. The other one's got the babies. You just got to open it up. That's where she keeps that fresh blood.
She always has the babies first and then the ice cream. Top it off with. Really gets rid of that baby taste. Okay, so, and I know that you actually mentioned this to me, and I had also been reading about it, but that, what's it called? That the Justice Department did what, like an internal investigation about the what happened with Jeffrey Epstein, right? So they this is when Jeffrey Epstein basically was caught red-handed and convicted of, I believe the crime was, what did they call it? Soliciting an underage prostitute or something like that. Where you're like, well, she's underage. That's kind of not really a prostitute. That's more, seems like attempted rape to me, but okay. But so they caught him and he ended up getting a sweetheart deal, right? Where he was like allowed, you know, he did like very little time, I think, but like was allowed out on the weekends and then was like, and the guy who was the prosecutor at the time, who later worked in the Trump administration and then stepped down, basically said that he got the word that this guy was connected to intelligence and so go easy on him. And so he did. There was no problem. Even though this guy was very clearly and duly convicted of being a predator, a child predator. But they were fine with letting him go. But don't worry, everybody. The government looked into the government's handling of this situation, and wouldn't you know it, the government determined that no crimes had been committed, nothing to see here. There was, I believe their words were, there was some poor judgment used. Now, I don't know about you guys. I've certainly been guilty of poor judgment a time or two in my day, but letting a child predator go basically scot-free, That I would consider slightly worse than just poor judgment. Robbie, you're our poor judgment correspondent. What do you think on your scale of poor judgment, how that rings?
I feel like the meals I eat late at night while I have hemorrhoids and I know I have hemorrhoids, that's judgment.
Yes, that is poor judgment. That
you
is.
You know, getting drunk when you're supposed to go to like your kid's baseball game and then just not showing up and then she turns into a slut later because her dad wasn't around, that's some poor judgment.
Yeah, there you go.
Being in a government where everyone thinks, hey, I think there's a bunch of sexual predators, and then you know that there was a sexual predator who initially got off and then you had to pull back in because the entire country figured out that you had busted a sexual predator and let him out, and then you start doing an investigation to see, hey, what happened here that this guy got this sweetheart deal, and then you go, whatever, it happened, and you move on. That's a little more than poor judgment.
Yeah, I would think so. But so this is the type of stuff, and this is why it's like why there's such fertile ground for conspiracy theories, some of which are crazy and some of which are very reasonable. But there's such fertile ground for these conspiracies to grow is because everybody with any modicum of common sense looks at stuff like this and goes, this is all bullshit. No one trusts that a real investigation was done into what happened here and we really got to the bottom of it. We know what this investigation was. It's just the government covering for itself.
Also, they're saying this is a statement of we don't care. Like, because if you the entire concept of punishing people is to prevent future people from doing it. And that's how you make a statement of, oh, society hate. You know what I mean? Like, if we rounded up people and hung them tomorrow on the streets, everyone would go, oh, shit, what those people did is really bad. And we should make sure not to do that in the future. When you look the other way, you're kind of making it known, hey, government's OK. This is part of the way we do business. And you know what? You can get away with it. No one really cares.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And there's no and you would think. I mean, I almost feel like you would think just for your own self-preservation that the government would want to maybe be like, we got to throw him a bone on this one. Someone's got to go to jail for this. Someone's got to pay for this because otherwise they're going to be on to us. Like just to protect your own racket, you would think they'd go, we really kind of got to do this. You know, Tucker Carlson said once, which I thought was a fair point, that he was like, and of course, I'm no fan of democracy, but he is. And he was basically saying like, look, if we have a democracy here, or if you're going to pretend we have a democracy here, and the people, you know, elect Donald Trump, then you got to build a wall. Like, even if you think walls are stupid and you don't think, you know, they do anything, it's like, okay, but you know what? They voted for a wall, so they get that. You got to, like, kind of give them what they voted for, because when you vote for them and they still don't get this wall, they just realize this is bullshit. My vote doesn't mean anything. I don't get to have a say. This isn't self-government. And whatever, maybe it's good that they realize that, because your vote doesn't mean anything and it isn't self-government. But there's something to this, like, idea that you would think the elites would at least be smart enough to be like, okay, people are getting pretty upset with us. This could be going in a bad direction. Maybe we ought to throw them a bone so they can at least, you know, and wouldn't it be so much easier for them to then argue against the conspiracies if they were like, well, look, obviously there's not some conspiracy, some QAnon type shit going on here. I mean, look how hard we came down on the people who let Jeffrey Epstein off. See? We would never put up with a sex trafficking, child trafficking ring. But no, they won't even do that. They won't even throw you a bone to try to convince you that there's some bit of legitimacy to this whole thing.
You know, here's why they get away with it. It's because the media is not. Look at the Russia collusion story and remember how every single day they screamed and hollered about Russia collusion. And you could think of probably 40 other stories when there's a school shooting, how much they go off for at least a week about how we have to get rid of guns, every single conversations with some crying parent, every single thing, what, like, why are there assault rifles? There's explanations about how assault rifles work. They drum up as much interest as they can in the topic and as much outrage as they can in the topic. Something like this, if the news cycle was 24/7 right now of, holy shit, wait, so the government just did a full investigation of the Epstein thing and they came up with nothing? Nobody did anything criminal? There weren't a single branch of the government that was involved? So wait, so we're confirming that he wasn't a government agent, or exactly why was he let off? There's about 100 questions you could ask. These are just the three off the top of my head, but you could be doing a 24/7 news cycle on this one, which would be fascinating. What happens is the government on these kind of stories is they take as much time as they possibly can to go like, oh, this one person got a slap on the wrist and it's on page 7. The only person who reported this one was Reuters. That's the only, or at least that's the only place that I saw it. And it's not even like a condemning story of government of how do they run an entire investigation? And they're just coming back up with that one person was used the term improper judgment. So this is a fault of the media that if we demanded, hey, what the fuck is going on in our government? Then government would, that's why he ended up going to jail, was the story came out and everyone's like, wait, why the fuck are we allowing for this? And so the reason why we're not seeing that with this is, I mean, thus far, who knows, maybe this just came out and more people like us will be like, wait, why is this just going away this easily?
Yeah. And it's just so transparent that there's not even any interest in getting to the bottom of this. I mean, where has it come out? Is the FBI questioning Bill Clinton? Like, hey, you were on the flight logs with this guy. We want to sit down and talk to you. Like,
wearing a nice dress.
Yeah. Like, and by the way, really brings out your eyes. But like, but you know what I'm saying? I'm not even saying like going after him criminally, but just like, hey, do you have any information that can help us like get to the bottom of this? You know, I mean, the FBI's got time to sit down with Flynn, right? They'll grill him over his conversation with Kinsley, whatever that Russian guy's name was. They have no problem grilling him, but there seems to be no interest here in trying to get to the bottom of this. They don't even pretend. They don't even try to convince people that like, oh yeah, this whole thing is not, you know, what it seems like, because it is what it seems like. And it's just a completely corrupt system. And so of course, when you have a system like that, people are willing to entertain some theories about how crazy it might be. I mean, look, like you think about it like this, right? Like me and you talk all the time about, you know, the worst shit that the military industrial complex and the deep state and the worst things that these guys have done. You think about some of the shit that like the CIA has done, some of the worst things. And it's hard to not go, yeah, and that's only what we know about. Imagine what they've been able to keep secret. I mean, the CIA is pretty good at keeping things secret. That's kind of their jam. So like, what, you know, what is the worst shit going on there? And it's enough to make you wonder when you realize, you know, how corrupt the whole thing is. And look, I got to say, from my perspective, I think there's, you know, it's not the best thing, I'm sure, for stability. But there's something positive about the fact that people are at least waking up. And I think this is true on the left and the right and the middle, but people are waking up to the idea that this whole thing is bullshit, that it's all corrupt. It's not for you. There's nobody in this whole establishment that is looking out for you. And that at least gives me a little bit of hope, a little bit of optimism. All right, guys, let's take a quick moment and thank our awesome sponsor for today's show, which is Cushy Dreams. Cushy Dreams has high quality CBD bud. I love this stuff. Love it, love it, love it. I smoke it every single night. I get great sleep. It's just like takes the edge off at the end of the day. It's just like smoking bud. It looks, smells, tastes just like the best bud you've ever smoked, but it's CBD. So you're not getting high. It just kind of relaxes you. CBD has a bunch of medical benefits, so it's really good for you. And they have the best quality stuff. I never even knew you could smoke CBD like bud until I found Cushy Dreams. I love it. All of their stuff is grown in the U.S. It's 100% hand trimmed, never machine trimmed. It's independent lab tested for compliance and purity. Each batch is slow cured to preserve flavors and cannabinoids. And I'm telling you, you can really tell the difference. If you're a pothead, when you open up one of your cans, you're going to instantly realize this is high quality bud. Cushy Dreams ships legally to all 50 states. It's CBD cannabis that isn't going to get you high. Like I said, I love it. I use it daily. Go to cushydreams.com. And if you use the promo code POTP, you'll get 20% off your entire order. Once again, that's cushydreams.com for high quality CBD bud. And the promo code is POTP for 20% off. All right, let's get back on the show. There was another story that I sent you, which I found this really interesting. This really kind of jumped out at me. But speaking of just the corruption of how this system works and what's really going on here. So there was a story by Katie Bo Williams. She writes for she's a senior national security correspondent for Defense One. And she used to write for The Hill. And she wrote this piece, which a bunch of establishment neocon types are like laughing at and sharing around as like a dunk on Trump, I guess. The piece was up over at Defense One, and the title of the piece is "Outgoing Syria Envoy Admits Hiding U.S. Troop Numbers, Praises Trump's Middle East Record." So he actually is kind of complimentary to Trump, but in a very condescending way. Like, we had to treat the president like a child. Here, let me just read from the article. 4 years after signing the now infamous Never Trump letter condemning then presidential candidate Donald Trump as a danger to America, retiring diplomat Jim Jeffrey is recommending that the incoming Biden administration stick with Trump's foreign policy in the Middle East. Okay, so this guy, Jim Jeffrey, was a Never Trumper. That was, you know, where he was coming from. He was one of the, you know, Never Trumpers, along with, you know, a whole bunch of the National Review, you know, neocon type George Bush, Dick Cheney, you know, Republicans. So he says, but even as he praises the president's support of what he describes as a successful realpolitik approach to the region, he acknowledges that his team routinely misled senior leaders about troop levels in Syria. Quote, we were always playing shell games to not make clear to our leadership how many troops we had there, Jeffrey said in an interview. The actual number of troops in northeast Syria is, quote, a lot more than the roughly 200 troops Trump initially agreed to leave there in 2019. So, you know, people can dismiss conspiracy theories all they want to, but here you have a guy publicly acknowledging, kind of bragging about the fact that there are substantially more troops in Syria than what Trump, the commander in chief, agreed to allow to stay in the region. This is like fucking insane. And again, to your point about the media, this should be a huge story. A huge story. They make fun of people like us when we talk about the deep state and we talk about the fact that there are these unelected shadowy figures in our government who exert tremendous control over what's going on. And here you have one of them bragging about how, yeah, we just lied to the president and to his people about how many troops were actually in Syria. And we figured if we played it down to like, oh, there's only 200 there, that he would allow them to stay. If he knew how many were there, he'd probably want them to be pulled out. Okay, continuing from the article, Trump's abruptly announced withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria remains perhaps the single most controversial foreign policy move during his first years in office. And for Jeffrey, quote, the most controversial thing in my 50 years in government. So this is the mentality that these people have. Donald Trump announcing that he wanted to pull out of Syria was one of the most controversial things, and Jeffries as the most controversial things in his 50 years in government. It was very controversial to the neocon hawk establishment. That's it. This was not controversial to the American people. The American people would be fine with that. They don't give a shit about troops staying in Syria. That really tells you where their mentality is, that this is considered a very controversial decision. The idea of wanting to pull troops out of a region. But it also, you know, really, and this is the stuff I've been talking about for years, but this is what's so crazy about this guy. What was his name? Jeffrey. What was his fucking name again? His full name? Jim Jeffrey. Jim Jeffrey. Ah, yeah, it's the comedians making this up. Okay, so he says in his 50 years, this is the most controversial thing. Think about how many wars presidents have started in the 50 years that he's talking about. But that's not controversial to him. So Obama blatantly violating the War Powers Act and starting this war in Syria, that's just not really that controversial of a thing. But a president, as we said in the last episode, unilaterally ending a war, now that is considered controversial. All right, back to the article. The order, first handed down in December 2018, led to the resignation of former Defense Secretary Jim Mattis. It capitulated Jeffrey, then Trump's special envoy. I'm sorry, it catapulted Jeffrey, then Trump's special envoy for Syria, into the role of special envoy in the counter-ISIS fight when it sparked the protest resignation of his predecessor, Brett McGurk. For Jeffrey, the incident was far less cut and dry, but is ultimately a success story that ended with U.S. troops still operating in Syria, denying Russian and Syria territorial gains and preventing ISIS remnants from reconstituting. Anyway, sorry, my struggling with English aside. So this is his story. That basically he had a big victory because they denied Donald Trump his desire to pull out of Syria. And this is really, to me, a fascinating story that speaks to several different aspects of what has happened in the Trump administration. Obviously, it's a huge scandal that this guy is misleading the president about the number of troops there, and then happy to brag about it. Happy to brag about misleading the commander in chief, who was elected by the American people. This fucking Jeffrey guy certainly was not. It also shows just the weakness and the failure of the Trump administration. And as we were talking about on the last show, it's like now he's finally got Douglas McGregor in there and getting some competent people in there, and we'll see what happens. But this has been the problem with Trump all along, right? It's like, first off, what the fuck is this guy doing there? Why do you have some never Trumper war hawk as your guy, as you're trying to pull out of these wars? And this is the thing, is that you actually, this is where Trump's real weakness comes in, is that intellectually, there's nothing there. You know, like he's got a good instinct on a lot of the issues. He's got a brilliant genius level instinct on how to like self-promote and market himself. But this stuff, you actually need to know stuff in order to get this done. So you'd need to know which people to have around you and which people to make sure you get out of there. And I'm sorry, it's inexcusable that Donald Trump has some never Trumper guy who's going to lie to him about the actual troop levels there and manipulate him and ends up winning. Ends up, you know, for all Trump's like so much winning. Well, no, you didn't win this. You fucking lost. This guy won. He's bragging about it now, as he thinks you're on your way out, which who knows if he really is or not. But, you know, that it's like this is your failure that you needed. If you wanted to actually be successful at what Trump claims he was trying to do, you'd need to bring in the right people immediately. At least if he was smart enough to at least bring in, say, Douglas McGregor immediately, Douglas McGregor will tell you which one of these motherfucking guys are not to be trusted and who is. You'd need to know this. And the fact that like this guy's around, the fact that John Bolton ever ended up on Trump's cabinet, all of these things, they just go, this is Trump's real weakness. He doesn't actually know enough to know how to go about taking on the swamp. He wants to drain the swamp or whatever. Maybe he just thinks it's a good campaign rally, fucking talking point. I don't know. But this is, I don't know. So anyway, the theme of conspiracy theories, for anyone who wants to dismiss this is a huge fucking conspiracy right here. It's reported and no one in the corporate press cares about it. Not even a big story. No one thinks this is like some huge scandal, but it is. This is the unelected bureaucrats keeping America in a war that the American people never had a say in, and that that the president who they elected wanted, at least it seems, to get out of. And they lied to him to fucking keep him there.
We should send this guy a bill for the cost of those 700 troops for the years that they were there.
Yeah, absolutely.
American taxpayers agreed to 200. You lied and kept 900 there. The 700 that you kept there against our wishes, you should be financially responsible for that.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, to me, this is truly criminal, like to lie or misrepresent what's going on to subvert the will of the commander in chief is like just outrageous. Again, yeah,
that's gotta
I think you should get a lot more than a bill.
That's got to be fun to explain to the troops that are there, where like they hear on the news, Trump like, fuck yeah, I'm going home. Like, well, no, everyone's got it. But you just said we're going home. Doesn't he think we're, and like you see Trump making the announcement, hey, we're so happy to have the truth, like, home, I'm still fucking here. What are you talking about?
Yeah. And the other thing that's in there too, that was a point, is that, you know, this is where Mattis resigned because he wanted to pull out of Syria. And you really wonder, now this is what's so weird. And again, I really do think that this is a damning comment on Donald Trump and on the Trump presidency, that Mattis was his guy that he brought in. And Donald Trump is running on ending all of these wars. And then when he actually tried to end one of them, Mattis resigns over it. And it really just makes you wonder, like, did you guys not talk about this? I mean, did you brought in a Secretary of Defense who was not going to be okay with you ending a war, even though you were running on ending wars? That, like, this is such a failure of Trump. Even if it is more so a comment on Mattis and a comment on the swamp and all of this shit, but how does that not like fall a little bit on Donald Trump? If you're running on ending these fucking wars and saying like, no, I'm sorry, we're not going to just fucking fight wars because like Israel and neocons or whoever fucking want us to, like, this is not what the American people want, and it's destroying the country, is not to mention destroying the countries that we're fighting in. Like, we're not doing this anymore. Well, isn't some of that responsibility on Trump to make damn sure well that he appoints a Secretary of Defense who is willing to, you know, like, work with him to end these wars? Doesn't some of that responsibility have to fall on Donald Trump? I mean, it's just like, it's unbelievable to read this stuff.
Yeah. By the way, the article also, I read through it, but then it was interesting because from there, as being the war hawk guy, he actually compliments Trump's strategy and goes, our being uninvolved seems to be working better for the region than when we push for more involvement.
Yeah, but he's almost weirdly right. So he is recognizing that, like, oh yeah, I mean, there is something to what Trump's saying. Like, this actually might be the way to go because it's a disaster every time we get more involved. But he's also kind of complimenting Trump's like policy, which he was able to manipulate into being, well, we're still kind of staying in the region. So it's kind of weird and confused, but it's incredibly condescending. I mean, the idea that I don't know, but exactly like legally what the crime would be, but how would this not be a crime to be saying I misled the president to alter what our foreign policy would be, and that he's so comfortable to just brag about it? That's a thing, like when you're on the establishment side, you just don't even need to worry about there being any repercussions. And that's another thing that's really been exposed in the Trump presidency, like where you have like, so even someone like Donald Trump, right? When you have the president of the United States and then say, take Clapper, right? Who everybody knows, or I assume everybody knows at this point, blatantly lied under oath, blatantly lied testifying to Congress when he said he said that the NSA isn't collecting data on Americans. Okay, so just a blatant lie. And that guy is actively working to undermine Donald Trump. He's one of the major opponents of Donald Trump, like really pushing the Russiagate shit, really fucking highly critical of Donald Trump the whole time. And he doesn't even have to worry. No, there's not even a thought of prosecuting that guy. No one's coming after him. No one ever even talked about this. Trump never even like fucking made a push for this, at least that we can tell. So even when the president of the United States is an enemy, you've made an enemy out of him, you're still untouchable. Yet everyone in Trump's administration, like, holy shit, if you were in Trump's administration and you told a fucking lie like that to Congress, you'd probably have trouble sleeping every night because you're like, oh my God, they're going to fucking come for me. As like Roger Stone or Flynn or any of the other people, Manafort or anyone like that. If they told a lie like that, it'd be like right away, we're getting them, we're prosecuting them for it. And their lies would be like inconsequential, you know, like, oh, I said we did this business deal in January, but it was actually done in June. Okay, you're going to jail. You know, that's it. You're going to jail. But fucking these guys, not even a concern. When they're actually lying about something that is an underlying crime and very consequential, not even a fucking concern. So really, it really shows you something. And with all this shit going on, again, you could try your best to like laugh off, you know, conspiracy theorists, but it's
well, these aren't conspiracies. This is someone in government telling you that he kept troops in a region that the president wanted to withdraw from. And the other one is the Justice Department letting off the hook whatever branch of government was responsible for prosecuting Jeffrey Epstein, and clearly basically let him off the hick for child trafficking, which, how does our government let a wealthy billionaire off for molesting kids? The answer is because our government doesn't care about freedom. And so that's blatant as day. So the extension.
Well, it is a conspiracy. It's just not a theory. You know, it's right. Like these are factual conspiracies. These happened, you know. So then you go like, when people are sitting there going like, yeah, I bet there was voter fraud. You know, I bet they did cheat to get Biden in. It's like, well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, if these people are capable of all this shit, why wouldn't they? How would they not try to steal the election?
And the Department of Homeland Security telling me, oh, there were no glitches. All right, great. You mean the same department that likes the wars while John Bolton's coming out and starting to make a push? Hey, we need everyone to accept Biden. Yeah, great. So the sure. Department that really wants war is the department that's going to come forward and go, oh, we checked everything, it's fine, don't worry about that.
Yeah, it's so weird too. It's that Karl Rove, who was, of course, George W. Bush's campaign advisor and then his top advisor in the White House, he came out and was like, we have to accept Biden, you know, as president. And you're almost wondering, like, what's even the point of you guys sending Karl Rove? Like, is anyone going, oh, well, I mean, Karl Rove said, well, then, of course, that we have to. Like, George W. Bush came out and said it, and you're like, well, I mean, in that case, if George W. Bush even thinks so, well, then I was really holding on to these conspiracies. But now that Karl Rove has spoke, I'm sure. Yeah, let's go Biden.
Did you see the Adam? I think the Adam McKay movie, I think it was called Cheney, about the Bush administration and Dick Cheney as the vice. It was with
I did see one movie about Cheney. Maybe it was this one.
It had like all like the big. Anyways, they had Steve Carell playing Karl Rove. And although they make Haro like evil as shit, they make him just seem so awesome. We're just like, you know, he just doesn't give a shit. There's no morality there. He's just playing it for sport and trying to make his money.
Yeah, that's probably a somewhat accurate portrayal. I think I might have seen part of that movie. I can't actually remember. But anyway.
Oh, I might actually be confusing Karl Rove for who's the other guy who was like high up in the Bush administration?
Wolfowitz?
No. All right, whatever. I should have just not brought up this whole thing. Too many loose terms floating around in my head.
There you go. Now, I will say one other thing that I found kind of interesting, right? So the other thing that's going on is, if we continue on kind of conspiratorial, you know, talk. So there's been several publications that have run these stories. I mean, it started with NBC News. NBC ran a story the other day that said that, anonymous people close to the president, which, you know, they've only run stories like this that they've turned out to be wrong about 100,000 times in the last 4 years. But anonymous sources close to the president say that the president knows that he lost and that he's got no avenue to win the election. And he's just doing this to put on a show or something like that. Like, this was kind of the story. So this is like, again, what they're saying, which really does seem like, however you feel about what happened in this election, it does seem like there is this blitz attack of the media to try to cover every single angle. Like, first, we're going to give it to Joe Biden. We're going to show Joe Biden speaking. We won't show Donald Trump claiming that it was voter fraud. We're going to report all day long about the president-elect's official transition team, kind of give him all this, like, you know, like status. And then we're going to run these stories that, oh, and by the way, Donald Trump knows that he lost. But meanwhile, there's no actual sign that Donald Trump knows that he lost. And his Trump's lawyer was on the Howie Carr show recently. And he said that he is 100% confident that Donald Trump won this election by a landslide and that he's going to do another 4 years. And above that, he said, once the American people see the evidence that we have, he said, I'm confident that an overwhelming majority of people are going to be convinced by it and see this. Now, I don't know. This might just be lawyer talk. Who the fuck knows what's really going on? This dude's like a very a real deal lawyer who's tried like a bunch of like really high profile cases. But this could just be something like a lawyer says going into a case, like, my client is 100% not guilty.
The idea that Donald Trump knows that he lost, Donald Trump thinks he's 6'5", good looking, and Melania likes fucking him. Right. Yes. He legitimately thought he was building a wall. The country loved us. He was going to solve healthcare. There's one part of Donald Trump that think, listen, in the next election, when Donald Trump can't, like, if he wins this one and he can't run in the next one, he'll think he won that one too. So don't think for 1 second Donald Trump's walking around the White House depressed with his head down, like, oh, geez, guys, I lost.
Yeah, I don't buy it for a fucking second. I don't for a second. I think that Trump is going to fight with everything in him. Anyway, I'm kind of excited to see where all of it goes. But you do see, it's again on the spirit of all of this conspiratorial stuff, which people can make fun of you for entertaining conspiracy theories. But if you know the real deal of what's going on, you'd kind of be crazy not to entertain some of them. This is the kind of strategy, right? This is what America has done, undisputedly. This is what America has done in other countries when we're trying to affect the results of an election. What you do is, first of all, you fucking... They go out of their way to corrupt the media and pollsters. So you show in the media, like, how much one person is the favorite of the people. Then you have polls showing that they're destroying them. So you try to kind of, now that has an effect in several different ways. When somebody's dominating in the polls, number one, it discourages the base of the other person, because they're sitting there going, God damn it, we're getting fucking destroyed. It already starts building up the feeling of eventuality. You know what I mean? Like, this is going to happen. It's just a matter of time. So we're going to lose. This kind of prepares you to lose. It also allows for tremendous fundraising for the other side. So, for example, right? I know in Lindsey Graham's race, it was polling like neck and neck. that Lindsey Graham, that this guy in South Carolina could, this Democrat guy could beat Lindsey Graham. And off of that polling, he was able to raise like $100 million. Because it was like, oh, look, we have a shot to steal this Senate seat. So he got all of this money because he was doing so good in the polls. Polls turned out to be wrong. Lindsey Graham keeps his seat. Whatever. I fucking hate Lindsey Graham. This isn't an advertisement for him. I'm just saying that that kind of shows you how polling can actually have this influence on what really happens. So, of course, we know Donald Trump, there was all types of polling, you know, like that allowed them to pour big money into states like Ohio, where there was polling saying Joe Biden was going to destroy him and take this fucking state. This is all bullshit. So you have that. Then you have the entire media, you know, like not reporting on Donald Trump and just reporting on how it's bullshit for him to say anything about the election. And it's a given that Joe Biden will be president on January 20th. So just saying, all of these things are lining up. But what's interesting is that, at least according to this one Trump lawyer, they're very confident that they've got a real case here. We'll see. It seems to me that whether or not there was voter fraud or how widespread, which the only question is how widespread it was, I think it's going to be a really, really tough challenge for Trump to get this overturned. And I think Joe Biden will be installed as the president in January.
So what happens if, like, all right, let's say you have a full-fledged, you go to court and it's the court case against Dominion to prove that there was a glitch and X amount of Biden votes are really Trump votes. I mean, just the way government flows, I feel like that court case would happen in a year and a half from now at best.
Well, given the circumstances, they may be able to fast track it and be like, this has to, like, time is of the essence. This has to happen before January 20th. But I don't know. We'll see. Yes, typically you'd be right. It would probably take 3 years before you decide, you know, figure out what happened. But that, you know, obviously, if that's the case here, then that's meaningless. But I will tell you that Donald Trump, you know, he wasn't fucking knowledgeable enough or interested enough or willing enough to fight to make sure he figured out how many, you know, troops were actually in Syria and make sure he had the right people around him who would actually help him end these wars. You know, he wasn't willing to, like, he wasn't willing to fight in that manner to actually drain the swamp. But I kind of think that when it comes to Trump being labeled winner or loser, that he is willing to fight for that, which kind of, you know, it is, you know, tells you everything you need to know about Donald Trump. But also makes for an interesting situation that we're in right now, where I really do think this guy is going to exhaust every last option before he leaves his new home, or his home in the White House, which it's been for the last few years. Okay, that's our show for today. Thank you guys very much for listening. We'll be back on Monday. Robbie the Fire, what do you got to plug?
All right. Firstly, Donald Rumsfeld. That's what I was thinking of. It wasn't Carl.
Rumsey.
Okay. Making the correction. Yes, December 5th, come down to Philly, doing a big backyard show. Going to be a ton of fun. And then November 28th up in New Hampshire. Tickets are up on my website, robbythefire.com, or you can hit me up Twitter, wherever the hell you track me down. You yell at me in the street, I'll sell you the tickets. I don't care. Just track me down. I'll get you the ticket link. Come out. It's going to be a really good time.
Sounds good, my brother. Thanks for listening, everybody. Peace.